W-E-T-E-N-P-C.
Your night in just got legendary. Get ready to chase the rush, spin, win, and redeem instantly straight to your bank account at legendswithaz.com. With free-to-play slots, blackjack, keno, roulette, and more, experience all the thrills of Vegas without leaving your couch. Legends has it all.
Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Nope. Void where prohibited. Must be 18 plus. Play responsibly. Visit legends.com for full details.
Get in the game now and score a 50% bonus on your first purchase only at legendswithaz.com.
Hello everybody, it's me Roscoe, and welcome to the Kings of Anglia Issues Town podcast, which is proudly sponsored by Manscaped. Use the code KOA to get 20% off and free delivery for a new look for 2024 from up here to down there. And that's my phrase for the rest of the month until we switch it, but it's a normal plug for the Manscaped. We're here, it's Friday, another week nearly done and dusted, the second week of 2024. I'm joined by good old Stuart Watson and AJ as we look back at the week. Stu, welcome back to the show. How's things?
Things are all right, thank you, Ross. Yeah, it's been nice to have no midweek game this week after quite a busy little period. I think it's just a chance for everyone to catch their breath. But yeah, I still had a few little things going on, haven't we?
Yes, indeed. Let's get AJ in, who's got a fresh look, got a fresh trim. How's things are you?
Fresh. Yeah, absolutely. Good. I've enjoyed. I had a nice day off yesterday, and as Stu kind of alluded to, not having the midweek games, quite a nice little bit in there. And at least the fixture list kind of calms down a little bit over the next few weeks, doesn't it?
What, one thing I'm missing, though, boys, is a lovely 3 p.m. kickoff on a Saturday.
Yeah.
The rest of this month, we won't have any 3 p.m. kickoff. We'll Stoke 3 p.m. on New Year's Day.
So Stoke was 3 p.m. on New Year's Day. The next one after this will be Preston on February 3rd. That is the only one between New Year's Day and February 17th at Swansea. There's only one in that period. 12:30 at Wimbledon, 5:30 against Sunderland, 8 against Leicester, 12:30 against Maidstone, 12:30 against West Brom, and 8 against Millwall. So that is a pretty horrifying run if you're one of these kind of religious believers in the 3 p.m. kickoffs. Definitely, Ipswich have lost a fair few of those in the last few weeks.
When was the last 3 p.m. kickoff at Portman Road then? I'm just looking back through the fixtures. QPR was a Friday night.
Coventry.
We're going back as far as Coventry. Wow.
December 2nd, Coventry was the last 3 p.m. kickoff at Portman Road, yeah.
Wow. I do miss those because it's just you know what you're doing at 4:30 p.m. kickoff, don't you? You know, in terms of having breakfast and knowing when you're setting off for away games, when it's 12:30 or 5:30, you just it's all over the place, ladies and gentlemen. It's all over.
Ross's body clock goes absolutely mental when games kick off at 5:30 or 12:30.
Yeah, obviously I'm not the one driving, but you know,
obviously, I'll take it if that's the price of success.
Yeah.
Yeah, if the alternative is to swap back to League One and be having loads of nice 3 p.m. kickoffs at Accrington and Morecambe and the like, I'll take this scenario, I think.
Yeah, definitely. Oh, if we get to the promised land, it could be Friday kickoffs, Sunday kickoffs, Monday kickoffs, all of those. But we're not going to get too far ahead of ourselves. We'll get to that in a bit. I want to mention it, boys, before we get on to all the other bits. So I'm the Burton Albion new manager. I'm going to be having to carry a lot of the load here from doing the Ipswich Town podcast and everything and now managing. Mark Bett pointed out, and I have to admit, yeah, I do look like him a bit.
What's his name?
Martin Suffern. Patterson? He's a former player.
It is pretty uncanny, yeah. If people haven't seen it, take a little look at the new Burton manager. It's a glimpse into Ross Hall's future. I think he's... It's what you're going to look like sort of in your late 30s. When you get to sort of my age, Ross, that's what you're going to look like.
What are you going to do when you're supposed to, when Town do have their rare 3 o'clock kickoffs, how are you going to do that? Like taking all your snappy snaps, as you say, while also trying to manage Burton Albion as well?
They're playing Derby on Monday, so I can work out for this weekend. So it's all good. So I can go to the Ipswich game against Sunderland and I'll be heading up. Liam from Crewe will be driving me to Burton. Actually, they're wearing Derby, so Liam from Crewe can do that for me. Although he's in Scotland at the moment, so I don't know how. No, he's back for the Sunderland game, so he'll be okay. He'll be able to take me. So, but yeah, that was very, very funny to see that. So, yeah, can't wait to get started, Burton Albion fans. The Brewers, yeah. Rakeem Harper's there, obviously. So I'll link up with the Dream. But yeah, enough of that.
I assume your first act will be to release everybody 30 plus.
Yeah,
ruthless. Get them all together. Gone.
Do you know what? I'll have to look at their squad as a whole and see, you know. Have they still got, what's his face? Oh, no, I think he's gone now. The striker. They're right, who's been there for years.
Oh,
I forgot his name.
Yeah, I've gone blank on that as well. I know who you mean. Aikens, Lucas Aikens.
Yeah.
Now with Mansfield Town.
Oh, yeah, he linked up with Nigel Clough, of course. Yeah. Mustafa Carrier was there as well, Stu. Remember him?
Muzzy, yeah.
Good old Muzzy. Oh, he's 35 now, though. Whoa. See you later, mate. See you later. But yeah, we can go for the whole squad one day. But yeah, at the moment, we won't do it for this Ipswich Town podcast, obviously. But yeah, can't wait to get started at the Pirelli Stadium.
This is a glimpse into how Ross would play Football Manager, by the way.
Yeah. Sorry.
The release button would be pressed.
Yeah. That's what I mean. I'm more in a gaming sense. In real life, like Sam Woolsey, Massimo Luongo, you're all good for me, boys. You're good. Keep going. But there has been a departure, boys. Shall we segue onto that? I'll sort of speak to more to you, Stu, really, as you were the man who covered him for the last 2 years. But yeah, Carl Edwards has departed Ipswich Town. Mutual Consent FC, mutually consentlys contract. He was going to be out of contract this summer. Spent the first half of their season on loan at Oxford United. Your thoughts on that one, my friend?
Yeah, Carl Edwards is a bit of an enigma, really, wasn't he, during his time at Ipswich Town? When he first signed, he was one of the Paul Cook 19 summer signings. Those early games, I think he came on at Burton. I think he might have started the Cheltenham game, but those two away games early in Paul Cook's tenure, we looked at him and thought, wow, how on earth have Ipswich managed to get him in League One? And he spoke to people at West Brom and they seemed to rate him, both him and Rakeem Harper, sort of quite highly, the way they'd come through the youth ranks and were maybe a little bit surprised that they'd been allowed to drop down. So, yeah, just a box of tricks, wasn't he, in those games, and took people on and really exciting. The thing that sort of prevented him kicking on was his consistency of end product. That's why he was never able to quite nail down a starting spot and get a place in the side. But that said, he still played a decent role in the promotion last season off the bench. Probably the two Cambridge games are the ones that spring to mind. Came on in the home game and scored twice with, it was a cross, wasn't it? One of those goals was a cross, but let's be fair. But you could feel the sort of the groundswell of support for him and everyone was so pleased for him. In that game, even the away game, he stepped off the bench at half-time, I think, in that one and helped Ipswich get a valuable point. Yeah, it never felt like he had those consistency levels to really kick on at Ipswich Town. And, needs to find himself a home now where he can get starts. He's 25 years of age and he's not got enough starts under his belt for that age. So, it was a bit confusing the way it sort of panned out last week or this week, you know, with his loan was ended and then he was going to stay at Oxford to get fit and now the contract's ended. I would imagine it's probably helped Ipswich free up a bit of budget for the January transfer window doing it this way and has maybe paved the path for him to maybe sign for Oxford. You would imagine that he did quite well there until a hamstring injury struck around late September time. So he needs to get fit again, first and foremost. But if it's Oxford or if it's elsewhere, hopefully he can find a home. And I'm sure he goes with all Ipswich fans. Best wishes.
Yeah, indeed. All the best to Carl Edwards. 63 games, scoring 3 goals. And AJ, two of those goals was against your boys, Cambridge.
Thank you.
Yep. Obviously, Sorry, but they were very, you know, it's the iconic goals for Carl Edwards when he was here. Overall thoughts on that? Obviously, you only saw him, you know, in pre-season, but I think when he went out on loan to Oxford, you always felt maybe that could be the end for Kyle, because when you get loaned out, sometimes it does mean the end of a player.
Yeah, I think he always came across as that really exciting player in pre-season, but it was hard to see where he kind of fit into everything. And I assume that had kind of maybe been the vibe for a little while. I know when you look at Nathan Broadhead being on that left flank and then you look at Marcus Harms being on that left flank, there was always going to be the potential of adding other options, as Town now have obviously in that time as well. It felt like a tough ask for him to probably step up against that competition in the Championship. At the end of the day, he's come in, done exactly what Town have asked him, and gone with his head held high, I think. And I think the biggest thing that I can say about him is the fact that I think I was the one who ended up asking McKenna about, you know, what's the plan for him over the summer. So, you know, what is it going to be? A case of he was left out of the squad for the Bristol Rovers game, I think that was it. And McKenna said, look, at the end of the day, it's a situation where we want him to be able to play in this competition later because we're looking at him on a loan or a transfer. And when I put that out, this is a player who wasn't really in kind of the starting lineup picture, but the reaction was that of just, yeah, people being really gutted. So I'd say that speaks volumes of the kind of player and person that he was. Similar vibe to Greg Lee. So I definitely goes to everyone's wishes.
There's a comparison there with Greg Lee, isn't there, in terms of the personality playing into the way sort of people feel about him. Infectious smile, always played with a smile on his face. I think people remember him sort of dancing in front of the group team celebrations after promotion and everything. So that all plays into it with Kyle Edwards. But putting sentiment aside, he never quite grasped his chance. I guess it's that chicken and egg thing, that how can you take your chance if you don't get those run of starts? Are the likes of Amari Hutchinson and Jeremy Sarmiento miles ahead of him? We'll find out, but probably are ahead of him in terms of his development. But you know, when we went back to last summer, you mentioned Marcus Harness there. I thought Edwards might be the one to be kept ahead of Marcus Harness just because he provides something different in terms of being that 1v1 dribbler. And Kieran McKenna mentioned it recently, referenced it when he signed Sarmiento, that they've lacked someone with those just dribbling skills since Kyle Edwards went. And a bit like Greg Lee last summer, I think they let him go with a bit of a heavy heart to go and improve his career and seek first team football. I think they probably would have kept both of those rounds, you know, as decent backup options. But also you want players to be sort of fully committed with their head and heart, and sometimes you have to make that decision. So yeah, Kyle Edwards gone, and everyone will wish him well.
Yeah, sadly we never got that promotion rap video, did we? Obviously when he was at West Brom. But yeah, all the best to Kyle. And we haven't really lost anything, have we, really? Because with, Rakeem Harper, we actually spent a fee on him from West Brom. Kyle Edwards came in on as a free transfer. I don't know, we've just paid him up for his final 6 months of his deal. But at least we've not spent, like, you know, nearly $500,000 on him, just like Rakeem Harper. But yeah, we shall see where Kyle Edwards ends up, boys. Well, let's segue onto the FA Cup draw, which was on Monday night. And Maidstone United at home. Not Maidenhead, which some of us have been mixed up with. I know Kieran McKenna, I think AJ said it as well. The lowest ranked side left in the competition. It's been picked for TV coverage live on the BBC. Got a former Town Academy graduate in George Fowler in their side as well. They beat Stevenage in the last round. Thoughts on this one, Stu?
Very good draw, I think, with trying to remain respectful of the fact that it could be a potential banana skin and it's on terrestrial TV and the rest of the nation will be looking for an upset. I think the fact that it's at Portman Road lessens that chance of an upset. So yeah, we said, didn't we, what do we want? Well, a home game would be nice. Something interesting, not just another Championship side. Well, getting the lowest ranked team is provides a bit of narrative and interest around it, and Ipswich really have got a very good chance now of getting through to the last 16 of the FA Cup, and then who knows what could happen from there. So yeah, I was pleased with this draw, and George Ellacobe is one of football's nice guys that you know, he was down the road at Colchester for a long time. we're talking about Carl Edwards' kind of infectious personality. George Ellacobi is certainly one of those guys as well. So looking forward to this one.
Yeah, AJ, the magic of the cup is still alive. Mainstone, you know, a National League South side. It's going to be an interesting match. Last season, we played Bracknell Town and Buxton. Buxton actually at Portman Road. I'm sure Mainstone, they're going to bring their fans. It should be a good occasion.
Yeah, something a bit kind of, I'd say, more special about this, seeing as it's Town, someone who entered in the third round, hosting a side National League South. Yeah, it might be a little bit higher in terms of, I think, what Buxton were below that and Bracknell as well. So it's a different kind of test in that sense, but still a semi-professional side. With that, as Stu kind of referred to, it's a chance. I think this, if Town were to progress, I think it would be the first time they've made the fifth round of the competition since, from what I remember looking at, 2006, which is fairly astonishing. I think before that it was 1996. I can see Stu's already off to have a look and double check that I'm right in saying that. But yeah, I think that that's a fantastic opportunity. And you look at what would be, in terms of maybe a better draw, yeah, you've got the Premier League sides, like the top Premier League sides. I think there was always, I kind of raised the point, would you like to draw Norwich in this competition? But other than that, I think this is absolutely the one you want. And with them coming to Portman Road, obviously there's a kind of a sense of it's their big day out, and as it absolutely should be. This is, you know, this is exactly what they deserve for an unbelievable run in the cup. They've already dumped out Barrow, who are going great guns in League Two. They've dumped out Stevenage, who are one of the strongest sides in League One this season. So by no means a test to kind of play down or undermine at all, but pardon me. Yeah, absolutely. This is a fantastic opportunity for Ipswich, and one that we'll definitely be looking forward to, hopefully with eyes and going further. And the challenge, if they do go further as well, the fixtures will pile up, and it will be an interesting one to see how they balance that with the league games, because February and March will become heavy, but one step at a time before that.
Yeah, and obviously everyone wanted a big tie, didn't they? They wanted one of the big boys in the Premier League, but still should be a good occasion. As I said, it's live on BBC, so good money for Mainstone as well. And obviously they're coming here with a decent amount of crowd, I'm sure. Of course, they got relegated from the National League last year. So I think they're third currently in the National League South, so they're looking to bounce back straight away. Stu, have you got that stat on hand?
Yes, yeah. 2006-2007 was the season when Ipswich beat Chester and Swansea and then eventually went out to Watford. So I saw a stat the other day. I need to verify this, but it sounds legit that Kieran McKenna has now won more cup games in charge of Ipswich than Lambert, Cook, Hurst, maybe even McCarthy in there. You'd have to see combined, because Mick didn't win many cup games, did he? But however many of the previous managers combined, Kieran's already kind of overtaken those in terms of cup wins. So that sort of feeling of, there was a time not so long ago Ipswich would get this type of draw and you'd have a bit of a sinking feeling in your stomach. When I heard BBC One, it brought back flashbacks of Lincoln, the replay defeat in 2017 with the last minute goal. I was sat next to Henry Winter that day in the press box, and there was, you know, a lot of national attention on that, and that felt like the start of the demise, really, didn't it? But things have changed of late. We keep saying it, the TV curse, the this, that and the other. They don't feel as relevant these days. You mentioned the Bracknell and the Buxton games were negotiated pretty comfortably last year, weren't they? So, never say never. Like Alex says, not a game to be underestimated in any way, shape or form, but it's another chance to get the likes of Lewis Travis and Sarmiento up to speed. Yeah, there's still players that need some game time, so they'll be thankful of an extra cup game or two. So hopefully it can aid the league form rather than derail it.
Indeed. Well, bring it on for the 27th of Jan. Obviously, we've got two big games before that. Sunderland and Leicester, of course. There's been a goal that's been nominated for Goal of the Month, but just give it to him now, because Wes Burns' goal against Coventry has been nominated. AJ, I'll let you sort of cover this one. We've spoke about the goal many, many times, but no surprise it's been nominated and it's probably going to win, isn't it?
I really enjoyed getting that email into my inbox this morning saying that he'd been nominated, because it was just another excuse to watch it again. and watching it as a team move, I mean, God, I've said this probably about 10 times on the pod, but just everything about it, the way they play out from the back, the switch from right to left, the switch then again from left to right, Chaplin to Davis, Davis over to the right, the little dummying run from Harry Clark to allow Burns to cut inside, and the finish. It's not just the finish, and it's all going to be the talk about the finish, but as a team goal, it's just absolutely outrageous. What more can you say that we've not said in the last, what, 5-6 weeks since it's been scored? I'd say this is fairly nailed on to win it, but you never know. I think it does go to a public vote, maybe with a little bit of kind of pundit influence in there as well. I think that this is a fairly strong bet for goal of the season, to be honest. So we'll have to wait and see. Still a few games left to play this season to change that. But in terms of topping what Burns did against Coventry, wow, that'll take some doing.
Is there anything else? I've not looked at the other nominees that will trouble it in any way, shape or form.
I'd say I've had a look at some of the ones previously. If you remember when Nathan Broadhead had I think he might have had one or two nominations. I was looking at it and thinking, it's a good goal, it's fine. And he'd maybe stand a chance because the competition isn't that great. But he probably won't. I think it actually might have been Luongo. Luongo got a nomination in November, and I was looking at it thinking, is this a good goal he scored against Millwall? But the competition in general wasn't great. This was a very high bar in terms of the level of the goals. The ones that stand out, well, the other three nominees, essentially, Wes Hooters was one that was scored on the same day. And I think there was a lot of competition of people saying online, wow, he's not even scored the best goal by someone called Wes today. Which is the one where he lifted it over the goalkeeper from about 40 yards out, some hit in fairness. The other one's James Justin, looping a shot over the goalkeeper away at Cardiff. And then the one that I hadn't actually seen was Sam Klukas towards the end of the month, where he struck a really good volley. Was a volley, by the way, Stu. This is absolutely a volley on your adjudication panel here, but a nice volley from the edge of the area against Sunderland. So all probably be winners in their own rights in previous months, but in terms of travelling, I've got all like Wes Burns. I don't think they'd come near, to be perfectly honest, but when it comes down to a public vote and things like that, you never know.
Just as well the Patrick Bamford one was in the FA Cup.
That would have been a close call.
I think Wes might have been troubled a bit had that been in the league.
That was beautiful. That was a beautiful goal. I've just seen actually those goals back, and Sam Klutikus is probably... is second, I think, second. The other ones, you know, you can see them all the time, pretty much. You know, just see the goalkeeper off the line, just hit it and hope for the best. And if it goes in, happy days. But Sam Klukas is a volley.
Connor Chaplin style.
Yeah, pretty much. He hasn't been able to do that yet, has he? He's been so close.
He's hit the post twice, maybe. Post and crossbar, something like that.
Yeah. He'll hit it one day. Let's segue then on boys. I like segue. That's the word I'm using at the moment.
Word today, I have noticed, yeah.
Segue. Stu, update on the loan limit and max squad size. You're the man who knows more about this. You've got probably got a book about it now. Let us know with of course, Lewis Travis and Simon Into, Edwards going. Just a little bit of an update on that.
Who's the Brighton loanee?
Jeremy Saraminto. No, close enough.
You keep saying mint in there. I don't know where mint comes from. We'll work on it. Alex, do you want to go through your little breakdown again?
Yeah, this got a really nice friends edit on social media. So thank you for that one. Right, are you ready, Ross?
Go on, him.
Okay, Sar.
Sar.
Me.
Me.
N.
N.
To. Sarmiento.
Sarmiento.
Nailed it.
There we go. Right, perfect. Get in there.
We can move on.
There we go. Obviously, we've got 24 squads and all that jazz. You're the man who knows. Go.
And all that jazz, yeah. Right. Loan limit. People are sort of saying, what have they got to play with on that? It's four loan players at the moment. You can put five in your match day squad, so there's one to play with. So they've got to think very carefully about what they do with this last loan player now, Ipswich. Having got Travis and Sarmiento on loan, are there other positions like centre-half or even full-back that if you were to go with a loan player now and then suddenly you need to do the striker on loan, then that's just something to consider. And the 25-man senior squad limit, by my reckoning, they're up to 26 now with the two new players that have come in. So that's fluid during a transfer window. But obviously, by the time the game rolls around on Saturday, they game by game, you have to register your 25. So we're in a position now where somebody will have to be deregistered. You would imagine that would be Lee Evans, given the long-term injury at the moment and the fact he's unavailable. So that's where Ipswich are at the moment. They're at their 25. Evans has, I assume, already been deregistered. And it's a one-in, one-out situation now. Carl Edwards wasn't part of that conversation because obviously he wasn't named in the original squad at the end of the summer transfer window. So, whenever they bring someone else in, and you know, realistically, we're talking still about two or three new additions, possibly. One, arguably two strikers needed, and who knows with the injury situation at fullback, and Burgess being away at the Asian Cup, whether they'll look to add, you know, a versatile body in defence. But yeah, one in, one out. People like Shawnee Aluko could potentially be deregistered, and then you're looking at maybe a player sale here or there, which creates an interesting discussion.
Doesn't it? Next season it changes as well. Is it one less loan or something like that? I saw.
Yeah, I think FIFA are trying to change the loan rules, aren't they? I think probably led by Chelsea's ridiculous scooping up of every young player going and having about 50 players out on loan every year. They're trying to sort of bring that number of loan players that you can have out to foreign clubs, domestic clubs, kind of bring that down season on season for that reason, to stop the big boys just kind of scooping everyone up and sending them out.
Yeah, I still remember the, you know, when we signed, this probably under Mick McCarthy, we used to like have players on loan for a month or 2 months, you know, when loan window was just there. I think, you know, we got Richard Chaplow in February or something, and of course he scores that goal, and other players in like November, October and all that.
Called, like, was it like a 93 day loans or something? Yeah, they were called, weren't they? You'd get the transfer window shut and then you got this little weird loan period in between. Yeah.
Yeah, it must be weird for like being a lone player and just like, and you're only going to be there for 93 days and you move on. Sometimes they sign permanently, obviously, if they do well and everything, if they've not got any plans with their parent club. But yeah, loans. Very interesting indeed. AJ, any thoughts on this before we move on to AFCON and Asian Cup? Cameron Burgess is at the Asian Cup, not AFCON. Just remember that.
Where's Elkin Baggett?
Asian Cup as well.
Well done. Good stuff. We should have like a game going through all the championship players. Are they representing, or are they playing at AFCON or the Asian Cup? And go through the entire 17. I've done a piece on the entire 17, but in terms of the squad stuff, I think it's just interesting to see how they find that balance now, and in terms of moving players on, because you'd maybe look at someone, okay, Lewis Travis has come in, for example. Do you then think, well, Don Ball, for example, God, that hurts, say, could be someone to move on? And in terms of the squad numbers, in terms of your defensive midfielders, yeah, that probably makes sense. But then you think about his versatility, the fact that he can cover at centre-back, at right-back, probably put him in goal or up front at this rate, to be honest. I know I called him the Swiss Army knife over the summer. Do you want to kind of take that risk, knowing how kind of rigorous a championship season is, knowing how tough it's going to be in February and March when Town are doing loads of miles and playing Saturday, Tuesday? Do you want to take that risk? Ideally, you probably wouldn't, but in terms of them balancing that with squad registrations, that's going to be really tough. And maybe someone like him and the others as well. I mean, we've touched on Freddie Lavapo, but in terms of someone like Don Ball, do you look at those signings coming in and thinking, well, where's my role in this team now? I could see that before, but now bringing in another defensive midfielder changes that. When you're Freddie, I mean, yeah, it's kind of hard to see beyond this month with him, but at the end of the day, he's still one of two strikers at the club. So hard balance to find. I'm sure that Town aren't the only ones dealing with this problem, but it's nice to have the strong squad. It's nice to have big numbers. It's nice to be able to come into midweek games, make those changes. And it also doesn't feel like Town are weakened that much, but it's still kind of so difficult to find that balance within these squad numbers and limits, and even things like loans as well now, because I'm pretty sure that if they had the option, Town would probably explore the loan market more. But I think realistically, unless someone like Brandon Williams goes back, No idea whether that will be the case given his game time over the last few weeks. But other than that, it's going to be one coming in. Maybe would they like to have more? You don't know. But trying to find that balance overall was pretty tricky.
I like the idea of Don Ball playing up front. Is that the solution to all of the current striker worries? Might have been under our nose all the time.
You know, when you said Wes Burns, or you got told that Wes Burns has been playing up front by Kieran McKenna. I mean, maybe this is like the backup to the backup now. You're going to have, Don Ball, false nine, something like that. There's loads of possibilities there. Maybe there's like this untapped goal scoring potential within him.
Yeah. That, the scenario you said there about not letting someone like Freddie go till you've got someone else in, and Caden Jackson maybe falls in that bracket, Ipswich. Jackson's out of contract in the summer. You can see that, you know, it's probably trending a certain way for both of those players, but Ipswich are not going to let either of them go till they've got adequate replacements in. So you have to bear that in mind on the flip side when you're talking about Ipswich trying to get people, that is going to be a similar scenario at the chain further up the line, that Premier League clubs, for instance, are waiting. Players are available, but only when they choose to let them go. So I know there's been a sort of a sense of building frustration that a striker is not in the building here, but Kieran McKenna did warn us a week or so ago that it's a little bit different with strikers. There's a bit of a holding pattern going on here. Ipswich now are, you know, in League One, they were the big fish in the smaller pond and maybe could apply a bit of financial muscle to get people. Now they're up against the likes of Leeds and Southampton and others for the same sort of players. So it's not easy. It always felt to me like it might go towards the wire with the marquee striker signing. So we just have to be patient and trust that, as they've shown over several transfer windows now, that the plates are spinning and the wheels are in motion, and hopefully it all comes together.
Yeah, we shall see. So yeah, no sexy stuff as of this recording for this week, but we shall wait and see. Don Ball has only scored 5 goals in his career. Obviously, he has been a centre-back and right-back and stuff, and a midfielder. So, you know, we'll let him off. We'll let him off there. But yeah, if we want a guy who can score goals, maybe move.
It happens from time to time. Do you remember? I think Neil Warnock, didn't his wife one day say to him that she'd had a dream the previous night that one of his centre-halves or full-backs was going to score a hat-trick? So he put him up front and he did indeed score a hat-trick. So maybe AJ's had a premonition about Don Ball. Maybe we should tell Kieran McKenna later on, see if he wants to go with it. I remember Steve Watson was a fullback for Everton back in the day, former Newcastle player as well. He went up front as an emergency striker and scored a hat-trick one day. So stranger things have happened.
I remember when Ollie Hawkins was here and we had a centre-back, you know, sort of like a it's a crisis in a way, and of course he was a striker for us, and then we're like, oh, he can play centre back as well, and we're like thinking and obviously he has gone on to play centre back, I think, for Mansfield. I think even he's at Gillingham right now, but yeah,
used to happen a lot years ago. People like Chris Sutton and Dion Dublin sort of
Richard
changed.
Richard Naylor
for Ipswich sort of went, people changed from centre back to strikers and vice versa.
Yeah, watch this space, ladies and gentlemen, we shall see. let's quickly talk about the Asian Cup and AFCON. AJ, you're the man who knows more about this than us. I think it starts today, actually. I think the Asian Cup, I think Qatar, who are hosting it, they're playing. I think Cameron Burgess potentially will play tomorrow against India. How will that affect town and Chatswood sides?
Yeah, so the Asian Cup kicks off today, Qatar against Lebanon, and then AFCON starts tomorrow. They basically run concurrently, so that they're going to be finishing around about the same time. So those who go deep into the tournament will be away until about, I think it's February 12th, roughly, pretty much spot on around the month. In terms of Elkin Baggett, I'm not here to slate Indonesia, but I think there's a good chance we see him back sooner rather than later. Sorry, Indonesia, I don't really fancy your chances of this one. Australia are among the favourites for the Asian Cup, around about kind of third or fourth. Even if they make it to the semi-finals, then you're looking at a third and fourth place game, because those do happen. That's still going to be around mid-February, so I think there's a fairly strong chance that, unless there's a total tanking from Australia, who I think, when did they win it? 2015. So they have got a title to their name. Japan, the kind of the runaway favourites with this one. as the strongest side and the ones who always get quite deep into the World Cup. But he'll be gone probably up until that point. So that's going to be quite a few games. You're looking at, I think that'll take you up until around about the West Brom game, that half 12 kickoff. Town not the worst affected. There's quite a few teams who've lost two players. I think as well with the fact that one of them's Elkin Baggett, again, someone who maybe isn't quite in the first team picture, means that really the big loss is Cameron Burgess. So, yeah, that's a big blow for them from that perspective. But then you look at someone like Leicester, for example. Leicester were due to lose four. Wilfred and Ndidi picked up an injury that's going to rule them out for, I think, the best part of about 2 months. So it's only going to be three, but there's still more than anyone else in the division. You're looking at they're going to be without their two main strikers. Well, Vardy's injured at the moment. I don't think that he's kind of nearing a return. It might be quite hard given his age. And then looking at Patson Daka away, Kelechi Iheanacho away. All they've got at the moment is Tom Cannon. So they're definitely weaker up front going into that game where Town are going to go to the King Power in just over a week, and they're probably the ones who've been the worst hit by it. Overall, there's about maybe five or six teams who've lost a couple of players. Hull probably another who've been hit fairly hard by it. But overall, I think you look through these squads and they've got enough to deal with the absentees. Southampton, maybe one where you'd be thinking, oh, they're going to be losing a couple. They've lost Joe Aribo, who's a good player, but when you look at the depth they've got in their squad, it's absolutely outrageous. It's just going to be a one in, one out situation. They can deal with that with ease. So when you look at it in terms of the promotion race, West Brom hit quite hard, depending on, I mean, I guess realistically you have to look at them as playoff contenders, but they're definitely going to be without a couple of big ones in Ajayi and Diangana. Other than that, it's really looking at Town without Burgess, although that kind of readjusted back line has been quite good, I'd say, in the last few weeks. Other than that, it's Leicester who've taken the biggest hit. Tom Cannon in quite good form, but for a player of his age, having to shoulder the burden of a team that hopes to be the best in the history of the division, I think that's quite tough. So maybe one that Town can take advantage of.
Yeah, we shall see. And AJ will be the man to cover all bases for the Asian Cup. So if you want...
I'd assume so. I think that'll be my role, won't it? Realistically.
Yeah, I don't care. Of course, if Cameron Burgess and Australia win it, then lovely job. Happy days for Cameron, but deep down, no one really cares. But yeah, anyway, that's maybe just me being blunt about it, maybe. But best of luck to all the teams who are competing in the AFCON and Asian Cup. And we're going to move on to a big game on Saturday, live on Sky. Sunderland are in town. The Black Cats... of course, Town beat, it was Tony Mowbray's Sunderland back then, 2-1 to start Town's championship season with a bang. Nathan Broadhead and George Hurst scoring the goals. Now they've got a new manager in Michael Beale, not Ian Beale. AJ, myself, I've even typed that in at one stage. I put Ian Beale in, but no, Michael Beale, of course, who left Rangers a few months ago. Stu, how are you feeling for this one, my friend? Sunderland, of course, sixth from the table. Got a decent team, but they've got a new manager now.
Ian Beale would play Don Ball up front. Yeah. I'd trust Ian to do that. Sixth in the table. Sunderland is where they finished last season as a newly promoted club. It's where they find themselves now. Another tough test for Ipswich, isn't it? You just keep thinking, oh, they've got through a tricky little run of fixtures. And the next one, Sunderland at home and Leicester away. So it doesn't get any easier. Sunderland in Jack Clark have got one of the division's best players. He looks a Premier League standard player. May well even go there this month. Talk of West Ham being interested in him. 12 goals from the wing. So he's someone to keep an eye on. Bit like Ipswich, have they got enough of a goal scorer at the moment? It's a very young squad, isn't it? They've gone down that route. I think there's a lot of talk about whether they've got enough experience in their squad. But... another tricky game considering Ipswich, as we know, are going to be without at least a couple of key players. So it's more about what Ipswich can do, how they can handle the players that they're going to be without. Hopefully the Wimbledon result last weekend just provides a little bit of timely confidence. And yeah, it'd just be nice if this kind of feeling, the sort of X games without a win in the league doesn't grow, and already. There's a bit of noise now with people like Don Goodman, the Sky pundit, talking about pressure being on, and that's created a bit of conversation this week. All that sort of stuff. We don't really want that narrative to grow too much and it to, you know, to come into play psychologically. So it feels like this, with Leicester coming up after it, feels like this has got a reasonable weight to it, I would say, this game.
Yeah, so it's a big game. You know, Morsley Town, you know, still about to win the last five league games. Obviously got the win, as Stu said, in the FA Cup, was a good confident boost. AJ, big thing about this game, no Sam Morsley. He's first game of his two-game suspension. He's going to be a big loss. There's some other big losses as well. How are you feeling for this one?
Step up, Lewis Travis. This is your time, I think. He's had a full week in training. He comes in with a little bit of kind of in and out of the Blackburn team, but I don't think that would necessarily do too much damage to his momentum. You'd hope that, well, maybe this is a good chance for him to start. At the end of the day, as a natural defensive midfielder, it's these two games you're really looking at, where Town are going to be without a natural defensive midfielder. pardon me. In terms of Sunderland as well, it's interesting looking at their results because their form is all over the place. They are an unbelievably streaky team. You look back to kind of the start of October, three losses, then bounce back with win, draw, win, then had two losses and a draw, then two wins, then two losses, then win, draw, win. And then they come into this one off the back of a 3-0 loss to Newcastle. And that's maybe an interesting one to look at because it's going to be a similar team that played that game that's going to come to Portman Road. And have they been knocked a little bit? You know, losing at home to Newcastle in a game like that is kind of no disgrace in a lot of ways, but everything surrounding that was an absolute train wreck for Sunderland. If you haven't seen the build-up to that one with what happened at the Stadium of Light, I implore you to go look at the many articles that have been written about what happened to their stadium in the build-up to that, all the negativity around it. There has been a lot of negativity even before that. When you look at Beale's appointment, the vast majority of fans didn't want it, thought it was a bad change in terms of getting rid of Mowbray and bringing him in. Then to welcome your biggest rivals, your arch rivals, in probably up there with one of the biggest derbies in the country, have that in an FA Cup third round tie, the first one that's been played in something like 7 years, and to lose 3-0 in a game where the gulf in quality was absolutely colossal. You could see it from space. I think that might have knocked the stuffing out of them a little bit. So they've had a week to reset. They'll understandably look at the Town team and think there's no Sam Morsley, there's no George Hurst, there's areas we can get at them. They're defensively looking at having a bit of a reshift in terms of Twanzebe's been at right back, in terms of Edmondson maybe hasn't had quite the minutes, but he's impressed quite a lot. Leif Davis, touch and go, things like that. So it's just about how that balance plays out. Are they going to be a team that's totally knocked by what happened last weekend? And are they going to have one of their poor streaky runs? Possibly. Are they going to look at the positives and think there are really ways they can get this Ipswich Town team? Yeah, I'd say so as well. Someone's got to give there. But I think they'll see it as an opportunity. And Town will also be thinking we can get out of these for what happened last week. I don't think they're fully going to be there.
You look at their results and they've beaten Leeds, Southampton and West Brom this season, which tells you on their day they're a good side, hence why they are where they are in the table. But then I look at their away form recently and a 1-0 win at Hull aside. They've not been that great on the road. Drew at Rotherham in their last away game, lost at Bristol City before that, drew at Millwall, lost at Plymouth, drew at Swansea, lost at Leicester, lost at Stoke. So I think Ipswich can take some hope and belief from those results. I'd just be very, very interested to see what Kieran McKenna is going to tell us a little bit later on this afternoon in terms of who he's got available. We know Sam Morsley is suspended for the next two. I think Alex is right. Lewis Travis has been brought in for a reason. I think there might be a bit of rustiness to him, but I think the type of character that we've heard him described as being this ultra-competitor warrior, someone who just wants to play, means I think that he'll go straight into the team after a week on the training pitch. Up front is going to be a very big selection. Personally, I think it will be Caden Jackson. If he's fit, we need to check in on that because I think he did come off with a little bit of a knock at Stoke and was an unused sub at Wimbledon. But I think from what I gather, the Sunderland goalkeeper's not the best and most confident with his feet. So Caden Jackson kind of charging him down might be something that they look at, as opposed to kind of Broadhead playing, I guess, as more of a false nine up front. And then fullback is going to be very interesting indeed. Whether, you know, the big question is whether Leif Davis is fit with his calf strain that's kept him out for a bit. Is Harry Clark okay? He's having injections in his Achilles. So yeah, this is a real tester now for Ipswich. Can they get through this period? They've been very, very fortunate with injuries up until this point. How can they cope? Can they get through this little period?
Yeah, and obviously we'll find out more, as Stu said, about from Kieran McKenna's press conference. Obviously, we're recording this before that. So, yeah, we don't know. It's very much up in the air until we find out. So, Stu and AJ will be there to give you a live blog and all that jazz. Shall we just get right into predictions then, boys? Because, yeah, we still don't know about injuries and stuff. I'm going to give a little update on the leaderboard. Of course, AJ is still leading the way with 32 points. I'm on 29. Heathie's on 28. He's on 18. And Stu, you're on 17, my friend, but it's still, you know, halfway of the season to go. What do you reckon then, boys, for this one? Shall we start, Stu, or do you want to take it?
I'll start if you want. Yeah, I've gone 1-0 Ipswich.
Ooh.
Yeah, they've been, despite all the changes in defence, a couple of clean sheets recently. I think there might be an extra bit of focus on that at the moment with some reduced attacking options. And I think it might come from a set piece. We saw a couple of scruffy goals from corners at Wimbledon last weekend. I've got the fridge down as the goal scorer, George Edmondson.
God, when was the last time he scored a goal? Oh,
he scored. Got one at Plymouth, I remember, didn't he?
He did, yeah.
That was like second phase from a corner.
Yeah, it's been a while anyway. I don't think he scored in the championship, has he? Obviously. But yeah, interesting. 1-0. AJ, what do you reckon? Both teams like to score. Ipswich Town, obviously, at Portland Road, we've seen many, many big score lines. What do you reckon?
It was 2-1 away. I'm going for 2-1 at home, mirroring the reverse fixture. I thought that going George Edmondson was going to be a really left-field pick, and then Stu took it right out of my hands because my logic was exactly the same. I thought, oh, set pieces were a big part in that Wimbledon game. Who realistically is going to be the big centre-back to get their big head on that ball and turn it in? And I went straight to George Henderson. But you know what? At the end of the day, maybe Stu's pointed me in the right direction because I'm in a position where I can play it a little bit more safe. I think I'm not here to take risks. It's in my hands. Nathan Broadhead got a goal and an assist at the Stadium of Light. He'll be up for this one. If he's playing up front, then he'll be bags of goals, who's playing on the left. Well, not bags of goals, but, you know, he's in a position to score bags of goals. If he's playing on the left, then he's in his natural position and he'll be right up for it, regardless of where he plays. Maybe hasn't hit quite the right levels, but you look at what he did last week against Wimbledon, he's been in some kind of form in terms of his performances in that one. So he's going to be my pick. Nathan Broadhead to score first, Town to win 2-1.
Okay, just a quick little stat on George Emerson. Last goal he scored was in the 4-4 draw against Charlton, Stu, and also scored against Morecambe away from home as well last season, obviously. And he also scored in Northampton in the Pizza Cup back then when we won 6-0. So yeah, it's been a while since he scored, October 2022. So can he change that? I'm going to go for a draw, actually, boys. I'm sorry to say. I'm going to go for a Desmond, good old Desmond, a 2-2. And Connor Chaplin's going to score first to sort of break this little purple patch he's on. As we spoke before, haven't we, Stu, that he's had purple patches before. I think he's 6 games without a goal. So he'll get himself a goal and maybe he'll start the scoring. And
it's the opposite of a purple patch. That's a drought.
Oh, yeah.
You're going to start a purple patch. Is that what we're saying?
No. Oh, what am I talking about? I don't know what I'm talking about, ladies and gentlemen. Don't know what I'm talking about. But he's going to score anyway. And we're going to draw, unfortunately. We'll get Heathie's prediction as well. And we'll find out, you know, how we get on against Sunderland at Portman Road. Boys, any other business from you? You're heading off to the Prince Conference. I know AJ's got to get ready to get a train in a second. But any other business from you, Stu?
Nope, no other business. Keep your eye on the website for later on. Alex is going to be live live updates throughout Kieran McKenna's press conference. So I think you'll all be wanting to hear what the latest is on this striker search, whether Leif Davis is fit or not, if there's any other injury concerns going into this one. So yeah, log on and get those updates as soon as it comes out of Kieran McKenna's mouth. It will be channeled down Alex's fingers and onto our website for you.
Yeah, type it away as always. AJ, any other business from you?
I don't know how my Wi-Fi is at the moment. Everything's kind of blacking out. Been on a hotspot for the last kind of 30-odd minutes since Stu said, Alex, I think there's problems with your Wi-Fi. There absolutely are problems with my Wi-Fi, so apologies for that. Also, I'd say apologies for no live blogs at the last few press conferences. I think that it's been a little bit hard to kind of juggle that with the amount of games and getting in and out of Ipswich, but back today, back next week, all the updates live on the website, so got lots of stuff to get your teeth into in the next few hours, and hopefully that'll be a running theme over the next few weeks too.
Indeed, bring it on. Quick little plug as well. Heathie will be back next week, so because I've been on everything this week, so you're probably sick and tired of me, but Heathie will be back in the hot seat. Also check out all the other podcasts we've done this week. Track the Girls Talk with Maisie Barker, chatting about her start to life at Ipswich Town. Also looking ahead to the Track the Girls game against Charlton in the FA Cup, which is a big game. They're playing a championship side, so it should be a good game at AJ Arena in Felixstowe, 1 p.m. kickoff. Get down there if you fancy watching a game of footy, maybe two games in your weekend. And also check out the Kings of Anglia fan social with Bloomers and K-Dog to get their thoughts on all things Town as well. As always, big shout out to our sponsors, Manscaped. Use the code KOA to get 20% off and free delivery. If you're going to the game, enjoy it. If you're not, follow the game with the boys and myself as we look forward to that game at Portman Road. And thanks again for listening to another Kings of Anglia. Bye-bye for now.
Social casino experience has arrived at Legends.com. With thousands of the best free-to-play casino-style games, chances to earn millions of bonus coins and win real money. Legends is revolutionizing the Vegas experience wherever you are. If you love winning, then you'll love playing at Legends.com. Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Visit Legends.com for more information. Legends with a Z.com is legendary fun.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.